This week's guest is helping to lead one of New Hampshire's top 10 private companies and one of the top 5 fleet management companies in the nation. We talked to the co-CEO of Merchants Fleet about the future of the company following the retirement of his predecessor who led the company's phenomenal growth. I'm Matt Mowry, co-publisher and executive editor of Business NH Magazine and Granite Media Group.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan, co-publisher of Business NH Magazine and chief creative officer for Granite Media Group. And welcome to BizCast NH.
Christine, inspired by today's guest. It's one thing to lead a company. Mm-hmm. It's another to co-lead a company.
Yes.
And
yes, it
so
is.
We have had this experience mm-hmm. of going, we went from being co-workers to being in charge of this whole thing.
Yes.
What's it been like having to share, you know, decision-making
yeah.
and the check-in? And what's that been like for you?
Well, I have to say it's been great because I've thought about if I were the sole person in charge, it's overwhelming. Mm. And what I really like about having a business partner, a co-owner of the company, is that we can bounce ideas off of each other.
Yes.
And we can kind of check in with each other. And you've got somebody there that can be your sounding board, but can also help develop ideas or it takes a weight off your shoulders knowing you don't have to make all of these sole decisions and you can actually, you have somebody there that you know you're on the same page and you're working towards the same common goal and you can kind of work with each other.
I agree. And, you know, it's nice to have someone who knows exactly what you're going through
mm-hmm.
and you can have really honest conversations with about what's going on at the company and, you know, what needs to be done about it or frustrations you're having or anxieties you're having. And they know, and they can be there. And like you said, just to be able to talk things through
mm-hmm.
and we have different strengths. So
right.
we complement each other, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you will bring a different perspective that maybe I didn't consider. I went, oh yeah, I hadn't
right.
thought of that.
And vice versa, definitely. And I think we've kind of identified our strengths among each other. So we know when we can lean on each other for certain aspects of the job.
And I get why CEO peer groups are popular because
mm-hmm.
if you are at the top alone, that can be a lonely place.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot on your plate and yes, you're going to have trusted advisors inside the company to turn to, but there are times that you just want to have that really honest conversation without scaring the heck out of the,
right.
the rest of the people in the room.
Right.
And you know, being able to turn to others that are going through that and can bring that perspective. I think I can see where that would be really valuable.
I agree. And I do value that a lot. It's so good to have you as a business partner because you have somebody you can go to. And we kind of know we can talk to each other about any of the issues we're having yep. when it comes to the company. And, you know, like I mentioned before, because we know we have the same ultimate end goal. We know anything we're discussing and anything we're talking about is because we're still we're trying to get to that goal
right.
of, you know, making it a better place to work, making it a better company for our customers and just, you know, making sure that our company is the best that it can be.
Well, I think, you know, we have a mutual admiration society. And now it's, you know, I think time to delve into our guest and everything that's going on that's this exciting company here in New Hampshire of Merchants Fleet.
Definitely. Our guest today is Kirk Hoffman. Kirk serves as the interim co-CEO and senior vice president and chief financial officer at Merchants Fleet, a fleet management firm in Hooksett, New Hampshire. Joining in June 2023, Kirk brings more than 20 years of financial industry experience to Merchants. Throughout his career as a financial executive, Hoffman has held leadership positions at a variety of renowned financial institutions. Prior to his role at Merchants, he served as managing director and head of capital goods and fleet coverage at BNP Paribas, where he worked alongside Merchants Fleet as a financial partner. Hoffman received his MBA from Columbia Business School, JD from Fordham University School of Law, and BS from Northwestern University. In his free time, he enjoys skiing, hiking, biking, and spending time with his family. And he also resides here in Manchester. Kirk, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your new role as co-CEO at Merchants Fleet. I think, you know, I want to start by setting the table for our listeners and just talking about what Merchants Fleet is and kind of the rich history it has in this, the way it's evolved.
Sure. So Merchants is a pretty unique company, I think a pretty special company. So what our core business is fleet management. And we are the only fleet management company in North America that really covers two different important segments. One is the long-term fleet. The other is the short-term fleet, which is really a rental type of segment. And we are the only competitor, as I mentioned, that actually covers both of those segments, which makes us very special in the fleet management world. And when you talk about the rich history of Merchants, which dates back to Irving Singer, we also have what a lot of people from the New Hampshire area probably recognize us for, our auto dealership. And the dealership is how the company started. The fleet management piece grew out of the dealership. Now the fleet management piece is the big kahuna, if you will, out of the crown jewels of Merchants.
And this was a family-owned business with the Singer family, very well-known family in New Hampshire, known for the big blood drives that they would do. And so can you talk about, you know, the family knew that they wanted to grow the fleet management side, and they, unlike some family businesses that get stuck, you know, and they don't want to go outside the family, they realize that they need that outside expertise. And what happened when they did that?
Sure. So, you know, the family made the decision many years ago to dip their toe into the fleet management sector, and they were competitive in the fleet sector, which is really bifurcated towards the very, very large competitors in the space and a lot of smaller family-owned businesses. So the company was really competing in that latter category. And it really made this pivot point in that 2015 period to decide to change some of the management team, bring in some outside managers. This is the era that Brendan, who you'd mentioned, had come on board to the team at Merchants. And the strategy shifted to really try to compete with some of the big players in the industry. And when you do that, obviously, you have to look for different sources of capital. You need money to fuel growth. And so that made Merchants pivot and focus a lot on some of those external providers of capital. And, you know, given the leadership team that they had there at the time, they were able to secure a lot of that growth capital and really, you know, put it on the board what was an amazing trajectory of growth. And, you know, the company is the fastest growing fleet company in North America and has been for the last few years. And I think the family who had the entrepreneurship to put together the original auto dealership, had some different iterations, had a rental company at one point, morphed into the fleet management company, added our short-term side, which was corporate rentals again, had the foresight to do that, and then also determine, you know, when it was time to look externally for the capital that you would need to fuel the next stage of growth. And as part of that decision-making, you know, the company also, or I should say the family, made the decision in 2022 to sell the company. And that's when the transaction was done, where the company was sold to Bain, Adia, and some of the existing management team. And that ended the direct ownership and involvement of the Singer family in the business. But it is, they do hold a particularly special part of Merchants' history, and we're certainly consider it valuable, everything that they added to get Merchants to where it is today.
Certainly. And then, you know, I want to talk a bit about the time under Brendan Keegan. And like you, he was associated with Merchants from an outside perspective. He had been a customer, and then he was brought on the board, and then he was brought into the leadership role. And he really had an innovative vision for the company of where it could go, and a lot of chutzpah, if I might add. You know, this was right. A small fleet management company. The decision was, we're going to become one of the largest in the country, which is no small feat in that competitive marketplace. Can you talk about what were some of the key decisions that happened during that time that allowed the company to vault into being among that top five?
Sure. I think it was, there were several different pieces that led to that outcome, and several different decisions and strategies which were executed to put us in the position where we are now as the fourth largest of the fleet management companies in North America. So one piece was designing the management team for growth and putting the right people in the right places who had experience at some of our larger competitors, who knew what it meant to grow a fleet platform, knew what it took. So that was one piece of the puzzle that he put in place. The other one was what I mentioned at the outset, one of our real competitive advantages of having both the long-term fleet and the short-term rental fleet and being the only of the competitors that has that. While that may seem like a very simple concept to a lot of your listeners, in the space, it's two very distinct businesses. And what the advantage is of putting them under one roof is we could be a single provider to our clients. So our competitors might have to go to one company for our clients, or the clients that aren't with merchants, would have to go to one competitor for their long-term fleet needs. And when they want to supplement that fleet with a short-term component, they have to go to somebody else. So what we're able to do is provide them one-stop shop where they can actually have a cohesive process for how they meet their fleet needs. So by us being the only in the space to do that, that really accelerated the growth. There was a significant amount of clients that had interest in that one-stop platform. And where that really kicked into gear was during the unfortunate period of COVID, where a lot of our competitors were pulling back. We actually decided to grow during that period.
Right. You guys hit the accelerator during that.
We did. We actually grew over that period by about 38%, and the largest competitor in the space shrunk by 17%. So we were the only one actually growing our fleet during that period.
So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what is fleet management? Who are your customers? And what's a short-term, you know, the services you provide for the short-term needs versus the long-term needs?
Sure. So all of our clients are corporate. So we're not dealing with any retail customers.
Right.
Our clients span a lot of different corporate end users. So we have companies that are very well-known pest control companies. We have last-mile delivery companies. We have utility companies, we have construction companies. It's any kind of underlying corporate that has the need for a large fleet of vehicles. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, these companies clearly don't specialize in owning and maintaining vehicles. So it's effectively a decision to outsource the management of those vehicles, which I'll get into in a second, and then also finding somebody like us who will finance those vehicles so they don't have to use their own corporate cash to purchase those vehicles.
How many vehicles do you have under management?
So depending on how you measure that, we actually have over 200,000 of vehicles that we manage. Now, not all of those are vehicles that we're providing financing for, because mm-hmm. we do also have some clients who choose to own their own fleet, but we will do all the management of it. And you'd asked a little bit about what that meant to be managing the fleet. So it's everything from what sort of vehicles should you buy? What kind of tires should be on those vehicles? Because we have a very robust data set from all of our experience in the industry. Like if you're operating a pickup fleet for construction in Minnesota, what are the best tires that give you the best usage, best return? We also provide services like telematics so you can track your fleet. Track your drivers, see how their performance is. If it's a delivery type company, are the deliveries on time? If it's a service company, are they making their service appointments on time? We also provide full maintenance services through a nationwide network. So to the extent that you have a breakdown or anything like that, we can coordinate and provide through our network the management services. We also provide fuel services through our network of partners. And what that means is, you know, we provide the drivers of these fleets with a card, so all of the usage of fuel can be monitored. And because we have a very wide network, we can kind of negotiate different rates around some of these services, where it is certainly a pickup for the clients who choose to do business with us. But the services span almost everything and anything having to do with the fleet that basically takes that responsibility and, in many ways, what could be a distraction off of the plate of the company themselves.
So is that the lifespan of that company basically having that vehicle that you work with them?
Yeah, so we'll work with them through the lifespan of the vehicle, mm-hmm. but it goes well beyond that, right? Because we'll help them with the disposition of the vehicle, when to replace the vehicles, put them into the new vehicles. So it's you know, the average lease on one of these vehicles may be 3 to 5 years, but the client relationships run many, many years, right? And the idea is to continue to help those clients grow and give them the right advice and the right consulting from an overall fleet management experience for what they need.
And we'll be right back. Join Business NH Magazine in partnership with the New Hampshire Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives at the Business of the Year Awards Luncheon on May 23rd at the DoubleTree by Hilton in downtown Manchester. This prestigious Business Awards Luncheon will honor the 2024 Business Leader of the Year, Nonprofit Leader of the Year, Businesses of the Year, and Nonprofit of the Year. Network and celebrate excellence in business and leadership in the community with New Hampshire business executives and their teams. More information and tickets are available at businessnhmagazine.com/events. Sponsored by the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, Bank of New Hampshire, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Hampshire, Eversource, Northeast Delta Dental, and McLean Middleton. And we're back with Kirk Hoffman, Interim Co-CEO and Senior Vice President of Merchants Fleet.
We were just talking about the various services that you provide to your clients. You know, I was curious, you know, no matter how well maintained a vehicle is, it's still a vehicle and things can go wrong with it. I mean, are you also out there troubleshooting for your clients when that happens? Because obviously we're talking about folks that they're trying to get goods or services or people from one place to another that can be very critical and time sensitive.
Yeah, so we do provide call center services. So to the extent there's a problem with the vehicle, the customer can reach out to merchants when we have the management of those vehicles, and we would help assist them get to the right provider in our network to have whatever work or repair, et cetera, needs to be done, or help them manage if it has to have a tow or something like that, making sure that service can be provided. So we're doing that. And as I mentioned, the other real value add is that we sit down with these companies and whoever's in charge of their fleet and work with them to really advise from the front end what to do to make sure that they're getting the best value out of the entire life cycle of their fleet.
And it has been an amazing growth story here in New Hampshire that sometimes I think not enough people really kind of understand the evolution that this company has gone through. What started off as a successful family business, but on a smaller scale, has become, as I said, one of the top five businesses in New Hampshire measured by revenue. So this is now a multi-million-dollar nationwide company. How many employees do you now have?
So we're sitting on about 670 employees at the moment. We have our headquarters here in New Hampshire. We have one other office, which is in Chicago, our innovation center. We have individuals throughout the U.S. in the field, and that would be all of our sales reps and some of our other operating individuals who work with our customers when it comes to fleet needs.
I want to explore a little bit more about the growth strategy during the pandemic. And talking with Brendan, he had in previous interviews, as we covered the growth of the company, talked about that you had mentioned the last mile services. And obviously we saw an explosion of online ordering and the need to get goods because people weren't going into stores anymore. And, you know, and merchants saw an opportunity there to really service a portion of the market that it hadn't really entered. Can you talk about the decision to explore that market more and what it meant to the growth of the company?
Sure. I mean, it was also, it was, you know, a very concerted and intentional strategic mm-hmm. effort that played out at, you know, a time when there was a particular need in the market. So the company had been operating what was primarily at that time a summer camp business. And that's what our rental business was, because as you can imagine, you've got summer camps. They're operating in the summer. We had some university clients, and we were dealing with passenger vans and some other things that we would rent to some of these seasonal clients. So we always did have this small rental business to those types of institutional clients. And in sessions of deciding, hey, what can we do, you know, when these particular vehicles aren't needed for usages like summer camps, where can we redeploy them? And out of that idea was born the concept of trying to serve some of the last mile delivery companies. I mean, we would know a lot of these are your providers like Amazon. There's individual companies that contract with Amazon that do their driving. There's the FedExes, there's the UPSs, the DHL. There's a lot of different delivery companies that would serve this particular end market. And the idea was, you know, they tend to have different seasonal needs, particularly around the holidays and things. And that was the concept or the idea that was born of, hey, why don't we try to see whether we can find some different usage for these vehicles when our existing clients aren't using them. And then we began to see the growth that was going on in the last mile delivery segment, even before the COVID period. And then we decided to actually, you know, we worked with some of these last mile providers to come up with some different contractual needs that they had that we were able to meet and plan for. So we were there embedded. And then as COVID hit, the online purchases, as we all know, went up significantly. And we were sitting effectively in the catbird seat, having kind of created a strategy to address these needs. And in anticipation, even before COVID, we had lined up different supplies of vehicles. So as I think everybody knows now, there was a lot of supply chain disruptions, including the production of motor vehicles during the COVID period. And we were able to, one, be sitting on a supply of vehicles before the COVID period happened that a lot of these companies needed. And two, when others got scared, frankly, because of the uncertainty during COVID and decided to pull back, we actually became more aggressive because we saw what was happening in the last mile segment. So we increased our orders of those vehicles. And so we hit what was a sweet spot in the market where we had the supply of vehicles that a lot of these companies needed, and we were able to grow along with them in that last mile segment. So it was, you know, born out of coming up with an intentional strategy about how can we expand our revenue base to address some new clients with our existing assets. That was step one. And then step two was saying, hey, this looks like a growing segment. Why don't we actually start serving this segment itself? So we did have, you know, the team had the foresight to be able to see where that segment was going. And then three, you know, the hyper growth that happened with that segment out of COVID and our decision to take the risk that was a calculated risk and a risk that paid off to make sure that we had the supply to service that segment.
So I'd like to take a little step back and talk about your background. We like to kind of dive into our business leaders that we talk to. I know that you have your background in the financial industry. And what kind of brought you to that industry? What made you interested in the financial world? And then eventually what brought you in through to being an employee at Merchants and then the co-CEO?
Sure. So you had mentioned at the beginning some of my background. So I started my professional career actually as an attorney. And a lot of times there's interplays between the world of finance and the world of law. So I found my way into the banking world.
What inspired you to become an attorney in the first place?
So it's a good question. So when I was an attorney, I practiced litigation, which mm-hmm. is the courtroom version, not the contract version, if you will,
or it's law and order as it
exactly. But it was corporate litigation. It was corporate litigation. So I did have a lot of interplay with financial institutions, banks, and that kind of spearheaded, you know, more interest in working on that side of the aisle. And I made my way into the banking world, finance world and banking world, and began, you know, within the investment banking world to cover the broader auto industry, which included the fleet management industry, as well as the rental car industry. So I had a lot of experience in covering a lot of merchants' clients and worked with them over different strategic initiatives and advising engagements over the years, and actually came to really know merchants in about, it was right in the middle of COVID, actually. It was 2020. We talked about merchants having to go through some of their growth and having to fuel the growth by ordering more vehicles, which means they needed more financing for those vehicles. So that's how, through my coverage of the fleet industry, I met the team at Merchants, you know, Brendan at the time as CEO and some of the others. I worked closely with the company to work with them on various financing arrangements. The bank I was at the time took over the agency and became kind of the primary lender in their facility at the time. I also had been close to a lot of the consolidation activity that was happening in the fleet industry, which is, I guess, code word for a lot of mergers and acquisitions. So I talked about a lot of the strategic opportunities that were going on in the space with the management team at Merchants at the time. Got to know some of the Singer family who were owners of the company at that time. And when they made the decision to actually sell the company, I was fortunate enough to be able to work with them as an advisor on the transaction. I then got to know as well Bain and Adia and the individuals there who would ultimately be the ones who would purchase the company. It was an interesting time to be covering the fleet space because a lot of the competitors were going through similar sale processes. And it was very fortunate from my perspective to be able to work with the team at Merchants and help them bring the transaction, you know, home that was the sale of the company, and also advise them on, at the time, what was a pretty creative financing structure to help be able to fund the purchase of the company and set them up for the ability to continue to expand the fleet over time. So that's how I got to know the company and work with a lot of the management team closely. Fast forward to the 2022 period, after the transaction was completed. Actually, I should say it was the beginning of 23 after the transaction was completed. The CFO at the time was making the decision to retire. Brendan had approached me and said, "Hey, what would you think about joining as CFO?" And it wasn't something that I had directly thought about, but he put the bug in my head. And I'd spent so much of my career working with merchants and companies like Merchants, on a lot of strategic initiatives, M&A, financing, et cetera. And it was exciting to think about being on the other side and sitting directly in the driver's seat, not just the advisor's seat. So I made the decision to take Brendan up on his offer. And I had a lot of respect for the company, the team. I'd seen everything they've done. I mean, they were hands down the most dynamic and disruptive company in the space. So it was exciting to be a part of that equation.
And so I want, before we talk about the next phase, because the company's gone through some interesting phases, you know, a successful family-owned company, then a very fast-growing company entering into the national sphere. Before we talk about where it goes next, I want to take a step back and go back to another strategy that the company has explored, and that's the electrification of fleets. It's been a leader in that. It's done significant investment in that area. How has that been growing? How big of a is it as part of the future strategy moving forward in terms of being important? And as the United States has been slower than other parts of the world to adopt the infrastructure needed to support that, what kind of challenges has that presented to you, and where are the opportunities?
So a lot of good questions. So to take it from the outset, you're right. You know, we have been a leader in the fleet space on the EV side of the equation. Unquestionable that electrification of the automobile and commercial fleets, especially the types of vehicles we provide commercial fleets, is coming and will be the predominant engine type in the future. What's happened, and I think what you're sort of hinting at, is the electrification journey is turning out to be a lot slower than a lot of people imagined. If we were having this conversation 18, 24 months ago, I'd be telling you about all the orders, how the projections were looking for how much of these fleets were going to be electrified by 2025 and how much was going to be electrified by 2030. All those numbers are in flux now. They're slowing down considerably. And that's not, you know, that's not merchants saying that, right? That's what's happening. I'm sure a lot of your listeners can see the headlines and see what's happening with some of the electric vehicle manufacturers. And I think what you've basically seen is a lot of times the popular press, its eyes are bigger than its stomach. And the journey towards electrification comes with a lot more infrastructure, and it's a little bit of a slower slog than I think a lot of us anticipated. A lot of that is related to just simple things like charging, making sure you have compatible chargers. There's a lot of headway that's been made in that, right? You did have, you know, Tesla going out there and taking the chance with their particular variation on the charger and the supercharger. They've now become effectively the industry standard, with some of the major OEMs giving up their own particular method of charging and going with Tesla. I think for the industry overall, didn't have to be Tesla, but they were the ones that sat in the seat and won. It's good to have that compatibility issue. It's like if you think back of the older days of computers or things like that, where you had a lot of different makes and models, and back then it was the IBM compatible computers that helped fuel the growth of the personal computer because everybody had a compatible system. So that's one step that's been taken, but you need the chargers and the batteries that charge them to still take a lot of steps forward, right? You need to be able to have a battery that can hold a charge, especially for commercial vehicles, that can go the correct distance, that can operate in colder temperatures. Right now, you'll get a lot of range. You'll get a lot of range minimization in colder weather with the batteries. The advancements are happening very, very quickly, and it's getting better and better and better. When you look at the charges you can get today versus 3 years ago and the range you can get out of them, it's significant. So that's a good thing, but it's also a challenging thing when you're trying to think about a company that provides services like us and our underlying customers. You get a little of the upgrade anxiety as well, which is, well, am I going to go out and buy a whole fleet of vehicles that are electric that have a battery that, say, has a range of, you know, 200 miles when 2 years later there's going to be ones that come out, I'm just making this up, right, that have 800, you know, miles. Then what happens to the residual value of my existing vehicle? So there's a lot of these
concerns. We've been trained by our phones.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
There's a new one every couple of years.
Exactly. So, you know, you're making those advancements. So there's an obsolescence fear, there's an infrastructure fear, and there's still a cost. So I think that there was probably more of an anticipation of those costs of production coming down faster than they have. And I think when you put those together, it just means that the electrification, I think the phrase that I've sometimes used is like the electrification revolution is becoming more of an evolution. Mm-hmm. It's happening for sure. There's no question about that. It's just going to happen slower than a lot of of a lot of parties anticipated. So that being said, what do we do about that emergence? It's still a key initiative for us. If you're going to be in this business, you have to be on top of electrification. And even though those adoption rates are a lot slower than we anticipated, it's still a key area of focus for all of our clients. I mean, we are speaking to them with our EV, department and consulting group on a regular basis about these trends, about what the and we do have a lot of our clients, even though they haven't gone into EV in a big way, they're running different types of pilot programs. So we have been able to help them set those up. We've helped them with the chargers. I think we have our own product that we have clients that are in the construction space, for example, that may not. They have an offsite location where they're building some large project. So we have a service where we basically have a portable kind of charging unit that we can rent out for them so that if you do have EV work vehicles, there's a place for those to charge where you're not at a standard location that would have a pipe in of electricity. So there's a lot of initiatives. It's one of the key areas for us. And we will always be, I think, the leader in EV, but the adoption is certainly a little bit slower than a lot would have imagined.
So I think before we wrap up today, can you give us a little insight into what's next for Merchants Fleet? I know there's a lot of things we've already talked about, but is there anything on the horizon that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, there's several different initiatives that we're working on. I mean, one that we're particularly excited about is something that we call a Cap Zero initiative, which is zero capital. So I talked a lot about the management services that we provide. So we're looking at different ways to leverage our services and actually work with different companies, including companies that are in spaces like the last mile delivery space, where they may not want to lease vehicles or rent vehicles from us, but can we actually help them with the entire logistics of their fleet, their relationship with their individual contractual drivers, managing part of that process? So we are working on a couple of programs now, and this would in many ways be a third leg if you think about long-term, short-term, and then this Cap Zero where we're providing this different service model for some of these companies as another income stream and revenue stream for the company. But it's one that we're excited about, and we think it's another way to keep the momentum going at Merchants.
Well, Kirk, thank you again for joining us today. Once again, Kirk Hoffman is the interim co-CEO and Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at Merchants Fleet. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the stories and information you heard on today's podcast, find more by subscribing to Business NH Magazine or visiting businessnhmagazine.com. I'm Matt Mowry.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan. BizCast NH is a production of Granite Media Group.